Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
How can Christians engage the culture on topics like science, politics, depression, sexuality, personhood, and more? Find out with the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February, Faith That Engages the Culture. It's written by regular guest Dr. Alfonso Espinosa. Faith That Engages the Culture is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. Faith That Engages the Culture.
I hold this letter here in my hand. A plea, a petition, a kind of prayer. I hope it.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's time for listener email, the Issues Etc. comment line on this Friday, February the 12th. After we go through some listener email on the comment line, we'll be playing Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. That email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, and the Issues Etc. listener comment line, 618-223-8382.
Gary listens in France, and he's broaching a subject. Something you just mentioned going into the break. He says, "Dear staff at Lutheran Public Radio, please allow me to suggest an alternate phrasing for something Pastor Wilkin frequently says when introducing Dr. Ken Sherb. He refers to him being the author of a CD series of sermons. I recognize the desire to be brief, but every time Pastor Wilkin says series of sermons, I hear him saying CD, S-E-E-D-Y, series of sermons, not C-D, the letters. Firstly, this is not what you would expect from sermons. But secondly, and more importantly, when most people think of CDs, they think audio rather than digital text files. Referring to the series by its title, The Old Testament Collection, Preaching Christ in the Old Testament during the church year, you would actually help people access the resource better. If not that, I suggest replacing CD, the letters CD, with a phrase like, quote, available on optical media, end quote, or available on digital media, end quote. Thanks for the feedback and thanks for listening in France, Gary."
Gary, thanks for listening in France. There's actually some history to this because are they audio sermons or are they text files?
Remember, it was originally they're on CD-ROM, and we took that out.
Right.
So, I don't know.
So, Jeff types up, this is how it works in terms of the execution of the show. Jeff types up what's called a show sheet for every one of the, he doesn't type them all brand new, he has them saved. A show sheet for each guest and topic. And so, each guest has the name, and it has all of their expert qualifications or the connections that we want the listeners to make with them for their expert qualifications. And one of Dr. Sherb's is that he is author of this series of sermons that are on CD called the Old Testament Collection. Now, originally Jeff had typed CD-ROM series of sermons because that's how it was listed at Concordia Publishing House's website.
It's currently listed, this CD-ROM resource contains sermons that move through the Old Testament in historical sequence.
Now, nothing against Concordia Publishing House, but I don't think anybody's used the word CD-ROM for probably 10, 15 years because it originally was a designation for when CD was a rather new medium. It was there to tell you it was read-only memory. You couldn't write to those CDs back in the day when you couldn't write to every CD. That is put data down on these CDs. So I suggested we get rid of ROM because it was just superfluous. It was irrelevant to the listener, whether it was a read-only memory CD. And then I'm beginning to wonder whether we just leave CD out. Now, I have been, in the last couple interviews, just defying Jeff and crossing out CD and just saying a series of sermons. Now, the fact that it comes on CD, probably people wouldn't be surprised by that. But the format, although, to tell you the truth, the laptop I have sitting in front of me doesn't have an optical drive on it anymore. Yours doesn't have an optical drive on it. So maybe it's time for, for Concordia Publishing House to just put it on a thumb drive. And just, you don't have to tell them what format it is. It's just, this is a series of sermons. Bing, it comes in the mail. You got your thumb drive, you plug it in, and you've got the resource right there. So as the technology continues to move on, we run into these kind of problems. So I'm going to opt to just say, I'm not going to say CD anymore. I'm just going to say a series of sermons from now on.
And the listener should expect what?
A CD.
But not audio.
And it's not audio. The listener's correct. It's just text files, data files. There.
I'm assuming so.
We should never assume anything, but.
So are you saying that basically Ken's just reading these sermons to us? Is that what you're saying? Is that what you're saying? You're not saying that.
No. I will tell the listeners something that I've told listeners casually before, and that is Ken is a fantastic guest. He's an unbelievable resource for Jeff. If Jeff needs to know someone who's an expert in this or that in the Lutheran pale, he just calls Ken, and Ken knows three or four people off the top of his head. Ken has been around the block so many times and has, in his capacity as both a theology professor and as an assistant to the president of the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod, met more people, not more than Jeff, but almost as many as Jeff. And so he's a fantastic resource. He's also an old radio guy. He used to, what was he, WOW?
The Clear Channel station in Fort Wayne, big blowtorch AM station in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
So he worked there, but he is decidedly old school radio. He is old school radio, and so when we do interviews, and this shows the incredible talent the guy has, he's reading his answers. He scripts my questions, and he reads his answers, and you cannot tell that he's reading. I've had guests where you can tell that they're reading. You cannot tell Ken is reading. He's that good at what he does. And
it's great content.
And he times every answer, and he's concerned about the clock and all of those things that producers usually do. So,
yeah, I love having him on. Does my job.
Oh,
don't
yeah.
Don't need me.
We said you're going to have to interview Sherb tomorrow at 11. I don't have to write questions. I just show up and read the script. Yeah. I can just take a nap.
Hey, you know, speaking of great bibliographers, today is the sainted Paul McCain's birthday.
Really? February I didn't 12th. Know that.
Yeah. Popped up on Facebook. And so keep Lynn and the McCain family in your continued prayers. Miss him greatly. There's so many times I just want to text him or, you know, send him an email. Or he wasn't big into calling.
You know,
usually if you called him at Concordia Publishing House, it went straight to voicemail. And the first thing he says, if you want to reach me, send me an email. It's like one of the first things he said in his messages. But
yeah,
anyway,
he didn't like talking to people that much.
Yep. The great man, Paul McCain, February 12th. So keep Lynn and the McCain family in your prayers, please. Peter lives in Canada. He says, hello, Issues, Etc. team. I am re-listening to show 0861 on Original Sin and the Solid Declaration of the Formula of Concord. This was a very interesting topic and helpful discussion. I understand that it's an error to say that sin is of the very essence of what it is to be a human being, and that man's essence became sin because of the fall. I also understand the point made in the discussion that sin is now accidental to man's nature. One thing bothers me still about this issue relating to our corporate confession of sin in the divine service. I am hoping you can help me understand it. Why do we say in the corporate confession of sins, most merciful God, we confess that we are by nature sinful and unclean? I have always found this statement confusing. It sounds like we are saying, like Matthias Flacius, that our nature or essence is sin. Would it not be better to say, quote, we confess that our fallen nature is sinful and unclean, end quote, or, quote, our nature has become through the fall sinful and unclean, end quote? Thank you for considering this question, and thank you for listening in Canada, Peter.
I completely understand your concern here, because it does casually sound as though we're saying that man's essence or nature, and those are things that in the Book of Concord, you mentioned Flacius. There was a controversy surrounding this theologian who had a tendency to overstate things, and he overstated the nature of man's fallenness to say that it is in man's very essence or nature to be sinful. And the other reformers corrected him. There was actually a Flacian controversy. They corrected him, saying, look, we have to distinguish between between the human nature essence and original sin itself. And if we make that distinction, then we don't fall into the trap of saying that, one, man is, it is of the essence of man to be sinful, and two, even more egregious, that when Christ took on our human nature, he of necessity had to take on our sinful nature too. And they said, we have to maintain the fact that the nature essence of man in itself is not sinful, but it has been corrupted by original sin, which Christ did not possess in any sense whatsoever, so that Christ can take our nature in its fullness, save its corruption or its fallenness, because he was not fallen. So I understand that. How you reword the confession of sins that is trying to say, what it's trying to say there in that common confession of sins, we are by nature sinful and unclean, is not that we are somehow essentially sinful. It's to be human is to be sinful. What it's trying to emphasize is that we just don't happen to commit sins. There's a corruption in our nature that is deeper than the sins that we actually commit. I mean, the formula of Concord speaks about the, as does Luther, speaks about the fallen nature as incomprehensibly fallen and corrupt. We cannot, it's an article of faith to grasp how corrupt our nature is by the fall into sin. And what the confession of sins is trying to say there is, we're not just here to confess that we've occasionally sinned, but there's nothing else wrong with us. We're good people who occasionally make mistakes. It's confessing, no, there is a corruption in our nature for which we are culpable and of which we are personally guilty that also needs to be confessed before God. That's why it says, we are by nature sinful and unclean. And then it will go on to say, in a very summary way, we have not loved you with our whole heart. We have not loved our neighbors as ourselves. Those are not original sin. Those are actual sins that are the result of original sin. So I don't know if I'm not in favor of tampering with the wording, but I think it does need to be explained. Pastors need to take time, maybe in a sermon or in a Bible class, to say, hey, when we say this, we're not saying that to be human is in and of itself to be sinful. That would end up in a very corrupted Christology. But I think the real problem nowadays, I don't know if you agree, Jeff, the real problem nowadays is not that people say, oh, we're so utterly sinful. That to be human is to be sinful. I think the real problem is that people think we're basically good people. We just happen to occasionally do something that's wrong. Yes, God thinks it's wrong, so I guess I'll admit that it's wrong. I think the error in our day is far more on the other side, to say that our human nature is not corrupted. Everyone is basically, underneath it all, really just a good person, and then good people occasionally do bad things.
All right, then. John from Michigan, he writes, I was listening to Morning Chapel from Kramer Chapel at the Fort Wayne Seminary, and the sermon was preached about taking care of pastors. That's a good thing. But why does the synod/district allow pastors to leave a congregation before a replacement is found? It seems to be saying that we need to support pastors, but they don't need to be loyal to us. Without a pastor, how long should a church stay open? Thanks for listening in Michigan, John.
That's a really, really good question. Actually, it's two questions. Why is our practice to release the pastor from his call before we found a suitable replacement? And I've never thought of it that way before. Because, of course, our practice has been when the pastor wants to leave, having received another call that he's accepted, he leaves. And then usually what has happened is the congregation then begins to start looking for the other pastor. Maybe it's deference to that pastor. We don't want to look for his replacement until he's basically left the room. I think that might be part of it. Part of it is that we have so extended this call process that it becomes so laboriously long. It can last, I've been in the call processes that have lasted almost a year. And maybe it would be smart for us to say, you know, the congregation can start looking for someone to replace our pastor before he actually leaves. And maybe we don't need to make this call process as complicated as it is. Maybe it's not about finding the perfect man. Maybe it's just about finding his replacement. And that way the congregation continues under the care of a pastor. Usually there's a vacancy pastor, but they continue under the care of the pastor, and then they can find his replacement. Logistically, it might be a little difficult if you got a parsonage, having one guy move out and another guy move in, and usually those considerations also lengthen the process. Where are we at?
Mark in Nebraska. I'll keep this one short for Jeff. Thank you, Mark. Regarding the Jeep Super Bowl ad, and we're seeing more and more of this in a lot of ads, what were they selling? They didn't even mention their product. I'm reminded of a toothpaste ad years ago during a Super Bowl that used a celebrity Olympic swimmer with a voiceover preaching to me to turn off the water while I brush my teeth. I guess the new product that corporations are selling today is nothing more than signaling virtue. Thanks for listening, Mark in Nebraska.
I think they were trying to sell Jeeps, but they're trying to sell Jeeps, and you're quite right, by connecting the brand to what is a common sentiment for people today. Everybody wants to return to normal. Everybody wants the fractiousness to stop. Well, not everybody, but most normal people want to find some common ground with their fellow citizens. Most people want that. And Jeep said, okay, that's what people want. Let's connect that idea and that aspiration to our brand. Now, had they chosen a different spokesman, it probably would have been easier because, as has been pointed out in a conversation with Molly Hemingway, Bruce Springsteen is not known for extending a hand of fellowship across the political aisle. He's known for the opposite of that. My brother pointed out, and he happened to be a Jeep owner. I think he might even be a Jeep owner now. He said what sells Jeeps is the images of Jeeps going up and down hills and over rocks and things like that. What sells that, maybe that's what Jeep forgot. They were trying to do something good, and they had an idea, maybe not the greatest idea, that we could, what do people really want? They want unity. Let's connect unity to our brand. When maybe they just should have shown the Jeep. Just Bruce Springsteen, no voiceover, driving a Jeep through an open field or over some sort of rough terrain. And Bruce gets his check, and people say, wow, that's why I wanted a Jeep. I wanted a Jeep because I wanted to climb over rocks. Or I wanted a Jeep because I wanted this tough vehicle.
And you could have played Born in the USA in the background.
You absolutely could have. If he would be, I don't know if he owns his own songbook, but he probably does. And if that's the case, he could have said, hey, use the song and Born in the USA. And there's Bruce Springsteen climbing rocks with his white Jeep. It was a beautiful vehicle, too. I was just watching the commercial the other day on they've pulled it from so many venues after Springsteen's DUI arrest that I was watching it. I was thinking, if you just turn the sound down, it's a really cool commercial. It's a little dark, but it's a really cool commercial if you just turn the sound down.
The previous host of the show, Pastor Don Matzett, delivered an essay at the 1998 Lutheran Church Missouri Synod Convention titled Evangelism in a Postmodern Age. And he was comparing, this is 98, so that's 23 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
He was comparing advertising in an age of modernity versus postmodernity. This is, so 23 years ago, Don Matzett said this. Modern advertising was of the same competitive nature. Chevy was better than Ford. Camels were smoother than Lucky's. Pepsi tasted better than Coke. If you don't believe it, try the Pepsi taste test. But when Coke decided to, quote, teach the world to sing, end quote, rather than compete with Pepsi, a whole new day in advertising dawned. Postmodern advertising does not place one product over the other. That is mean-spirited. You buy Bud because of frogs and lizards, not because it tastes better than Coors. Is that classic Matzett or what?
That's genius.
That's 98.
He nailed it. Absolutely. Do you remember I'd like to teach the world to sing, and they're all joining hands on top of a sunny hill? And then it's the tagline is just, it's the real thing. The real what thing? Which did you prefer, Coke or Pepsi?
I don't know. I grew up in a home where if you had it, whatever was on sale, you were just happy to have.
We had, you know, no. My mom never let us have soft drinks. Period. I mean, we could if we went to say to 7-Eleven, but she did not bring it home because she had five boys in the house, and it would be literally
gone.
They would just be chugging the liter bottles. They didn't have liter bottles in those days, but we would be chugging the liter bottles. So she just said nothing, none of it. I like Coke better. I just think it's tastes better.
I gotta put my vote in on this. I agree with you. Coke is much better.
Yep. So I love the insight that we're not selling products anymore based upon the merits of the products.
And pointing out the weakness of your competitor.
Yeah. We're selling products based upon these aspirations that people have, either to self-improvement or
unity,
political unity, all those kinds of things. And then I guess that makes it even more complicated. What does it mean to bring in a celebrity endorser for something? You know, there are still some of these, my wife and I watch a lot of old movies, there are still some of these commercials on television, like William Shatner selling something to clean his, what are those things they use when you snore? His pap machine or whatever. And all he's doing is telling you, it will get the thing clean. And I use it. And since I use it, you should use it. It's that blatant. I'm William Shatner. I was Captain Kirk. I was TJ Hooker. I use it. You use it. And people just say yes.
But at least he did give you one benefit. Apparently, these things are hard to clean. At least he mentioned a benefit. What was the benefit of the Jeep?
But that's
if I buy the Jeep, is it going to unify America?
If I buy the Jeep, I'm showing that I want national unity of the kind that Bruce Springsteen wants. Or maybe I show that I'm still young, even though Bruce Springsteen is 72 years
old. Didn't you say you thought it was a young Joe Biden?
You told me. They have the same plastic surgeon, I'm convinced.
Hey, quickly, one more very important question. Marcia writes, will Brian Wolfmiller's introductions to the Book of the Bible series be available as a standalone series? It would make it easier to access all of them.
Yeah, so we're going to have a Books of the Bible page and make them available there as individual downloads. You can
within the week, I promise.
All right, we will have it done. That's my job, is to get the Wolfmiller Books of the Introducing the Books of the Bible page. When we come back, it's time to, well, get your votes for Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. Get ready to vote for Molly Hemingway, Dr. Craig Evans, Dr. Ryan Anderson, or Dr. Alfonso Espinosa. 1-877-623-MYIE.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
What are the particular comforts of Lutheran theology and practice? Find out in my column in the latest Issues Etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Peter Slayton writes about growing up in a Christianity that was more about him and what he was doing, and finding in the Lutheran Confession a Christianity that focused on Jesus. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
This is a message for pastors and lay leaders of Missouri Synod congregations. As we're now rounding a corner on a year of COVID lockdown and measures, how has that affected your attendance and giving? In 25% of our churches, giving has actually gone up. Surprised? Why are some churches struggling while others are thriving? Here at LCMS Stewardship and the whole Office of National Mission team, we have answers and we have help for you and your church today. LCMS.org/stewardship.
Our Christian faith is under constant attack, and we must be proactive in keeping our children in the church. At Faith Lutheran School in Plano, Texas, we believe that an education rooted in God's Word is one that stands against the very gates of hell. Nothing in this world is more important. Offering a rigorous classical Lutheran education, we provide in-person and live online remote learning opportunities for preschool through grade 12. To learn more, visit flsplano.org, flsplano.org.
Jesus said, "I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." This is Monica Shannon, Life Coordinator for the Southern Illinois District Advocates for Life. We invite you to join your brothers and sisters in Christ for a peaceful, life-affirming prayer vigil from 10 to 11, Saturday morning, March 20th, at Planned Parenthood in Fairview Heights, Illinois. For more information, visit sidadvocatesforlife.com. sidadvocatesforlife.com.
Luther had Wartburg. We have Collinsville. You're listening to Issues Etc.
You may be one of those pastors who need to be refreshed and refueled because of your parish ministry.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Dr. Charles Geeshan.
Concordia Theological Seminary has a wonderful program, not only in continuing education during the summer, but in an advanced study program called the Doctor of Ministry. And it's a very practical program because it focuses on congregational ministry. It incorporates biblical theology with the ministry of the congregation. It's also very accessible for pastors, and it's also affordable. You can major in pastoral care and leadership, teaching and preaching, or mission and culture. And we pray that pastors will take advantage of this program.
Learn more about the Doctorate of Ministry program at ctsfw.edu or by calling 1-800-481-2155, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.